Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today and next week, we ask Jeff Page about his many years of presenting poetry around Canberra and his plans to retire this year. Plus, the Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from the region. For ArtSound Community Radio, I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Jeff Page has been not only one of Canberra's most celebrated poets, but also its most tireless promoter of poetry and also of jazz, with his monthly presentations, Jeff's Poetry and Jeff's Jazz. For the last several years at Smith's Alternative in Civic, and before that at a variety of other venues, as he'll tell us today and next week. He'll also read us some of his most recent poetry and share thoughts about, well, what it has meant to him. He came to the ArtSound Studios and spoke with me and Poetry on the Radio producer, Peter Monahan. Welcome today, Jeff. I really wanted to have you in for an interview because one of the more recent times we communicated, you mentioned that this could be, possibly, the last year that you do the poetry series.
Yeah, it could be. Mm.
And I just thought to mark just everything you've done for poetry in Canberra, we could just have a chat about that.
Yep.
The thing that I wanted to maybe start off mentioning, at least to me, I think there are different roles that poets take. I mean, a poet writes poetry, but some poets are also advocates for poetry, and I see you as both as well.
I think that's pretty true, yeah. I mean, I don't advocate all poetry, but the poetry I like, I advocate fairly strongly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I try to make it happen, you know, not only for myself, but for other people as well, you know, whose work I like, yeah.
I came here 5 years ago, and I knew who you were. Your poems are on the Poetry Foundation website.
Yeah, a couple there, yeah.
Yeah, good ones too. I really like them. But you have a history with Canberra.
Yeah, yeah.
Poetically. Could you talk about that a little?
Yeah. Oh, well, there's quite a bit to say, but I came here first in 1964. I hadn't published any poems then. I came here as a teacher in high school. And I started writing poetry in about 1965 or 6. You know, I didn't start when I was 15. I started when I was about 25.
Mm-hmm.
And I originally wanted to be a fiction writer more than a poet, and I was sort of moving into poetry at that time when I first moved here as a teacher. I met in the late 60s, early 70s, all the people who were substantial poets in Canberra at that time, you know, and I was very much a junior sort of marginal figure. Now I'm a sort of grand old man. They were grand middle-aged men, you know, people like David Campbell and Alec Hope, Bob Brissenden, Rosemary Dobson, Judith Wright a little bit later, and some other lessons. John Rowland was another one. I probably don't remember him. But he was good. So I met them, and so I was sort of that junior figure, and there were some readings. And Alan Gould and I, who's about 10 years younger than I, Alan Gould, I think you met him at least once, he and I collaborated in the 1980s on a series of readings at the Goethe Institute, sort of around about 85, 86, I think, for probably about 3 or 4 years. We used to run a season of about 10 readings or so somewhere in the year, week by week, which is strange that we did that in retrospect. But that worked fairly well. We got people from all around Australia. We got a bit of government funding and all sorts of things happened. We got some Aboriginal people from Arnhem Land to perform the song lines and things like that. As all the normal expectations. And then Alan got a bit sick of it because he won't mind my saying that he didn't get the feedback that he hoped he would get, you know, the response. He was hoping that we would be invited to read elsewhere as much as we were inviting people to read here, but that didn't happen very much. But that didn't worry me as it worried him. And so I think you can't expect to get anything in return, you know, if you work like that, except from the experience of doing it, you know, and you learn a lot from listening to other people read and you're reading their stuff and so on. And so that was in the 80s. And then in the 90s, 93 or 94, there was a cafe in Manuka called Cafe Neruda, and I saw this, I just ran into it, and I thought, wow, Cafe Neruda, there's got to be some readings there. And I started talking to people there, and it turned out that they'd met Neruda two or three times, and they were great fans, and they were mad keen about the idea. And I got a little bit of funding from some other people who worked in the building, like Aldo Jurgler, the architect, for instance, and he supported it for about 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So we started off there. We had two lots of 35 minutes with a break, which was with the one poet, questions at the end, and that sort of set the tune, but it was really fairly demanding. We'd get this poet from out of town and interrogate him or her at the end, and they'd read two lots of 35 minutes, which was an incredibly long time. So that was how it started, and then Cafe Neruda predictably went broke. It was too idealistic. And it was in a small place and a bit off the moat. It was actually where the TAB is now, Needless to say, the TAB is quite a bit better than the Cafe Neruda. But they were nice people to know, and, they were Chilean refugees, really. And then, really, from then on, I found another place, it's called Poetry at Chats, which is near the art school in the ANU, and Poetry of the Gods at the ANU. Places for shorter lengths of time, probably at least half a dozen places, one after the other. So I didn't really have a year when I wasn't organising from 1994 to 30 years.
30 years, that's incredibly impressive. As somebody, I for a while organised the Manning Clark series reading, and I also did Poetry on the Move, so I know. Yeah. How the logistics are, there's a lot of minutiae and there's a lot of just reaching out to people who are busy.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
What has kept you going all these years?
Well, I always find it interesting. Even some of the poets whom I'm very faintly disappointed with, maybe I still find interesting, because the psychology of the poet is nearly, why are they doing it? What are they getting at? What's deep down there that they're disturbed by? There's all sorts of reasons why people write, and if the poetry doesn't knock you sideways initially, there's always some psychological interest, amateur psychology.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't say that, because the main thing is that poets have been good, highly competent and entertaining. I try to get people who I know already read well, loud and clear and forthright, project and all that sort of thing. And I've always tried to have decent equipment and so forth, so that people can hear clearly.
Most recently, the readings are at Smith's.
Yeah.
On Mondays.
That's about 3 or 4 years now.
Right. First Mondays of the...
Yeah, first Monday of each month.
Of each month, January. Starting at 7.
Yeah.
And generally, you don't have open mic at Smith's
those
nights.
I don't know. There's a poetry there every Monday. I've got the first Monday of the month, and the other people, that poetry thing at Smith's, they've got the other three, and they have an open mic each time. So there's plenty of open mic available. I'm not a great fan of the open mic. I could go on about that, but it would displease some people. They already know that, don't they?
That's where your advocacy draws the line, hey?
Yeah.
One question I've had as somebody who comes from elsewhere is, over these 30 years, how has poetry in Canberra changed? And if so, how?
Yeah. Well, you can go back 50 years, You can go back to Alec Hope and David Campbell and Rosemary Dobson and so forth, who were fully flourishing in the late 60s and through the 70s. David died in 1979. Judith died in 2000. Yeah, so there was quite a lot of input. And Rosemary used to come along, even when she was my age, a bit older, and she didn't have very good eyesight. She'd come along to the readings and sort of encourage the younger ones in this sort of quiet way. It was good to have an older person who had been around for 30, 40 years coming to the readings. It helped to give you a feeling of credibility. I try to do that with younger people now, but I've been around as long as she'd been around at that time.
Right.
And so how did it change? Well, then in the 70s, the 70s is quite a time with poetry. You've heard about the poetry wars and so on, I imagine. Adamson and Les Murray on different sides, mm-hmm. and Tranter and so forth. And the so-called Canberra poets at that time, including people such as Alan Gould and myself, they were all a bit younger than I was. Alan Gould, David Brooks, when you start talking in detail, it's not as clear as it might have felt at the time. Mark O'Connor, these people were regarded outside Canberra as a bit on the conservative side, you know, aesthetically and technically. And so we weren't always liked. I remember a nice little insult that Adamson delivered when he came here, and he read a poem about Rosemary, and he said, "The only poet in the city is writing up late by lamplight," or something like that. And the three of us sitting along in front listening to this, you know, a little infuriating. But Bob was nothing if not infuriating.
Right. That's funny.
So that was the 70s, you know, there's plenty of... But we always got on well with him. There wasn't any sort of pointless avant-gardism or, you know, we weren't uniformly conservative, but we all got on well, you know, and I don't think anybody's dissatisfied. There probably wasn't, there weren't as many women involved as there could have been at that time, but they weren't uninvolved, you know, but perhaps they weren't equally numerous. And then that takes us through, oh, then I said we had those readings at the Goethe Institute in Civic for 3 or 4 years, just this season each year, you know, mm-hmm. maybe 10 weeks. And then that sort of petered out, and the Goethe Institute is not in Canberra anymore. They just have their main branch in Sydney, and that's about it. Then the Neruda story I told you about, and the rest is history, you know.
Right. Do you find that there are more or fewer outlets for publication now?
I find the fewer, especially for my sort of part, you know, for literary, relatively mainstream, relatively conservative, but not hopelessly conservative, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, post William Carlos Williams rather than post Longfellow or something.
Mm. That's the demarcation, yeah.
There's actually more poetry activity in Canberra. There's certainly more people writing up to a reasonable standard than there ever were, I think. But there's some people in the open mic that I think are not totally serious, and their motives are other than mine, you know, I'd say. Mm. But they're there, and there's performance poetry. Poetry is not even at Smith's, you know. There's performance. I'm not sure how thriving that is. It used to be at various places like Phoenix and so forth. Sort of blurred off into stand-up comedy a bit and so on, that sort of performance poetry. But that's been around since the 80s or 90s. Mm. Now, the poetry at Smith's, it's very broad-ranging. They have all sorts of more traditional poetry. They have various sorts of identity poetry and so on, and they give everybody a chance. I'll say that for them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's inclusive.
That's not automatically a virtue, though. I think they're only a virtue if you're getting quality stuff from the groups you're inclusive. And, of course, it's difficult at the beginning because when they haven't been included before, they don't have the sophistication that they might have otherwise had. You know, but they've got to be giving signs that they're on the way. And that, I know there's arguments, there are arguments about criteria, you know, that more conservative people like me, well, I do vote Labor, are they? That proves nothing, I suppose. They are sometimes accused of having a set of criteria which include them but exclude others, you know. But I think looking back over the history of poetry in English and in other languages that I know by translation and so forth, that there is a sort of a convergence about quality, and there are certain people that'll be in the anthologies forever, more or less, and other people that will probably never get into the anthologies. And that's one reasonable measure, you know. If you keep that in your mind, you know, not that you're desperate to necessarily get in the anthologies, but that should be your aim, I think. And the anthologists over time have varied quite a lot, you know, but gradually, despite all the sort of fashions of the moment, certain poems, particularly poems, you know, rather than poets, and poets, they find their way into the anthology and they endure in the anthologies. The only thing that worries me is will the anthologies endure?
Right.
You know? But I think they kind of do, you know. It's funny how they pop up, you know.
Yeah, they do. I think one of the best places to get a sense of the anthologies, at least in this region and in country, is the National Library's bookstore.
Yeah, yeah,
they,
that's
they
true.
Carry a nice variety.
Today and next week on Poetry on the Radio, we're speaking with Jeff Page about his careers in writing and presenting and advocating for poetry.
So if this is your last year, you've got your lineup. It goes February through December.
Yeah.
So we've got a little time off in January. How did you go about selecting the people who are reading this year?
Right. Okay. Well, that's not exactly the people I first approach, and sometimes people can't do it, mm-hmm. or they never get back to you and things like that. You know, you know all about that.
Mm-hmm.
What I try to get here, as you can see, the logic behind that, basically there's a good poet or a promising poet from out of town, and as far, particularly Melbourne and around Melbourne and Sydney and sometimes Brisbane, hardly ever from Perth because that's a bit expensive. You know? And I can tell you honestly what I do, you know, sort of, I've got a list of about half as long again, and I write to all those saying the first dozen who get back to me I'll run with because I'd be happy with any of you sort of thing, and then I take the first dozen. And then I ask the out-of-towners, I ask then the local people whom, I've got about 13 or 14 of them as well,
mm-hmm.
and I say, whom would you like to read with of these people that I've already got? You know, so it's a two-stage process. And then I get the second lot of locals. And they get, you know, as you know, they get 30 minutes if they're from out of town and 25 minutes if they're local. We have a 10-minute, quarter of an hour Q&A at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that formula works fairly well for me. You know, and it's surprising how often it seems to work really well. You know, it's kind of a... People say that, you know, they really enjoyed it, even though I thought, oh, I wonder if this will go or will this person be quite as good as I hope, dot, dot, dot. But it nearly always works, you know.
I think the Q&A is a little bit different than you find in a lot of poetry formats.
Well, I hope so, in a way. But I think that it should be more widespread because people like to talk to the performer later, but not everybody will get that chance. But it's a good chance. If you've got a really pressing question, you can ask it. You know, there'd be about 10 questions or so available, and you hear the answer, and that'll cover a lot of your need to kind of know the person behind the poetry a bit better. You know, those are the sorts of questions I often ask, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to you that caused you to write this poem, that sort of thing.
Right, right.
But they're often general principles as well, you know, how important you think rhythm is and what are your rhythmic principles and...
Very important question.
Just confirm they know what an iambic pentameter is, even though I never use one.
I'm just going to say, as I look at the list, I've got the list here in front of me.
I'd be interested in your feedback. It's too late now.
No, it's pretty neat, but I was just going to comment on is the geography of it, right? You've got Victoria, you've got Adelaide, so... South Australia, you've got Queensland, and then, of course, Sydney, you know. Oh, and even Tasmania.
Yeah. Well, that's deliberate. I tried. The original list had people from all over except maybe Perth. Well, I have had people from Perth.
But, I think it's really indicative of how alive and well poetry is in Australia.
Well, it's good that people are writing in all those places and around Melbourne as well, Castle, Maine, and so on around there.
Are there any that you wanted to mention by name or?
You say Trish O'Hare. I've only met her and read her work in the last year or two, and I have a positive opinion of her work, and she's quite a congenial person I've met fleetingly. Some of them, like Andrew Taylor, are people of my own generation. Now, that's a bit inevitable. Peter Rose is well known as a novelist and editor and so on as well, and you don't often hear him. He doesn't do a lot of readings, but I think he writes well, especially in more recent years. Angela Costi, the youngish Melbourne poet, you know, who she's fairly familiar with the scene down there, and
yes.
not
Yes.
Oh, she can do different things, you know.
Yeah, no, she's great. Yeah, I just, yeah.
Peter Boyle you would have known about because he's got a big Spanish streak, you know. He knows Neruda very well and Vallejo and so on. And, he's got a big Spanish influence. He's only read two or three times over the years on my list for one reason or another. I'm glad to have him. Alex Scovern, a sort of Melbourne intellectual, a sort of a very, very good poet, really solid, you know. David Mason and his wife, poet Kelly Cullen Davis, Chrissy. They're both, in my opinion, excellent poets. Chrissy's a bit undervalued, even though she's had a lot of poetry published in major American magazines, more than any of us has had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's just putting out a first book. Now she's been very cautious about putting out a first book. I don't know how old she is, but she's sort of around the 50s, I suppose.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And David Mason, I think, is an excellent poet. He was the poet laureate of Colorado at one point there. I don't know if you're aware of that back in your day in the States.
We've made a connection.
Yeah. And Kellis, she was originally from South Africa, and she's published about three or four books, and she's highly competent, sort of quite a moving poet. She's got a good book about the accidental sort of death of her son in Switzerland, you know. That the whole book is about that. It's very wrenching, you know, but sophisticated as well, you know. So it's not like Sylvia Plath gone wrong, you know. It's sort of right. Sylvia Plath, more or less, but it actually doesn't owe much to Plath, you know, but it's got that sort of intensity, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Then there's you, yeah, which I think you've been promoted to be out of towner because you left town. So you get 30 minutes now, 7:20. Yeah. And David Terrelling, he wasn't able to come at the end of last year, but he is able to come this year. Yeah.
So it's really, I think, an exciting lineup. My own bias is that the world needs poetry, and the world needs good poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just think it's important to acknowledge the people who keep it alive and thriving.
Oh, well, I mean, they do it mainly, well, the genuine people do, just out of, not disinterested, but sort of out of a kind of passion that doesn't really, is not discouraged by a lack of results.
No, right. I mean, poets aren't in it for the money. They aren't in it for the, you know, being
all
known
the fame,
out.
Really, you know.
Right. There's, yeah.
Say, oh, he's a well-known poet, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's not untrue, but.
No, only other poets know it. Yeah. One time, what was his name? Mark. Really tall Strand. American poet, Mark Strand, came into the bookstore I was working in, and he was so tall.
Yeah.
And, I mean, those of us on staff at this bookstore who knew poetry, I mean, we were beside ourselves, but nobody else cared.
No, that is, he is a good poet.
Oh, he's a fine poet. He died.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you could see him because he was so tall. He was like 6 foot four.
Yeah,
and
he was quite good looking too, wasn't he?
Yeah. So.
He started off on his readings here. I heard it read, and he said, I can't do the accent, but I do a bit of teaching, you know. And I have this exercise I set the students, you know. I give them the first line, "The train ran over me." And they all failed, and I succeeded. Read this poem, said, "The train ran over me."
How has the quality of reading changed over the years?
Well, I remember back in the early days, say David Campbell, for instance, and Rosemary Dobson, for instance, neither of them read at all well initially. Rosemary, well, but they were both very shy in different ways. You wouldn't have thought so, but Rosemary's obviously very shy and sort of ladylike and didn't like to push herself forward. And so she was ambitious enough aesthetically, you know, but not socially.
Mm-hmm.
David, he was very self-confident as a person. You know, he was very popular with all sorts of people, different groups and so on. He came from the rural gentry and so on and had lots of connections all through that. And he was in World War II, had a DFC and fighter pilot, a bomber pilot. And so on, you know. So, but he wasn't confident about reading, and he'd often get quite drunk before he read, you know. So he'd lurch around and mispronounce words and so on. But as the decade went on through the 70s, he got better and better, and he was a really good reader by the end. Then he died, you know. But the reading has, the quality's improved. I think the performance people had some effect on that, because people like me can no longer get away with being an indifferent reader. You know, Rosemary got away with being an indifferent reader, but she improved. And somebody like, I'll tell this to the folks, Judy Beveridge, you know, she was initially sort of very unobtrusive reader, sort of was competent at best, but she didn't sort of push. Now she's sort of a heroine, you know, she pushes it out and she's very clear and a pleasure to listen to, you know. But she was a bit shy earlier on as well, you know, in the mid-70s, you know.
Today on Poetry on the Radio, we've been speaking with Jeff Page about his careers in writing and presenting poetry. Come back next week for more of the conversation. For ArtSound FM Community Radio, I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Among Canberra-based poets Jeff Page has invited to read at Jeff's Poetry in 2025 is Rosa O'Kane. Here's a recording of her.
He'd be in heaven. In the marquee, I kneel on dew-soaked grass and hope the guy ropes of my heart hold while I listen to this waterfall of music flowing from harp strings and a voice that ripples like liquid crystal in the canvas dome. A cascade of ballads that takes me back to my father after Sunday Mass, singing hand on heart, I'll take you home, Kathleen. I wait in limbo for him to magic my mother's bashful smile, her hands behind her back, tying her apron. If he were here now, he'd be in heaven.
Rosa O'Kane.
The Rhyming Bugle. Regular poetry readings at Smith's Alternative in Civic are returning after the holidays. On Monday, January 20, and again on Monday, January 27 at 7 p.m, that poetry thing is a big open mic. Each participant has 3 minutes. Sign up on the night. On February 3, Jeff's poetry at Smith's, the long-running first Monday monthly series in association with that poetry thing, presents Trish O'Hare from Castlemaine and Owen Bullock from Canberra. On February 10, that poetry thing launches Alex Eagleton's latest collection, Taro. The Manning Clark poetry series takes place on the fourth Thursday of each month, and the Centre, which is in Forest, has announced some of its readings for 2025. On January 23, Tony Williams and Issy Unikowski will appear. Often poets mentioned in the Rhyming Bugle have been featured on past episodes of Poetry on the Radio. Listen back at artsound.fm. Pull down under the Programs tab for Poetry on the Radio. Poetry on the Radio is heard Sundays at 4:30 p.m. and Mondays at 10:30 p.m. on ArtSound FM. The program is produced weekly on unceded First Nations country in the studios of ArtSound FM in Canberra. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Soles. Producer is Peter Monaghan. Our theme is from an ancient hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid. ArtSound FM is a listener-supported community radio station. You can support the station's many arts-related broadcasts by donating or becoming a member through our website, artsound.fm.
Coming on January 26, ArtSound's new program, The Music of Now. Your host, classical pianist Jacob Wu, presents music of the last 80 years from Australia and around the world. Every Sunday from January 26 at 6 p.m, right before the early music experience. And The Music of Now repeats each Wednesday at 10 p.m.